I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, an independent Formula One podcast brought to you by MissedApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and we have an exciting week of podcasting to come. On Thursday night, Matt and I join our friends over at sportsbookreview.com. We look at some of the best bets for the European Grand Prix in a 20-minute preview show. Then, of course, on Sunday night on the live stream for our Baku GP review show that we do the night of the race, search Missed Apex Podcast on YouTube and subscribe there. If you click the little bell icon, you'll get a notification when we go live. But tonight, I'm joined again in the shed by paddock regular Joe Saywood. Thanks for joining us again, Joe.
It's a pleasure to be here. Well, I'm not really there. I'm here, actually, but there you are.
Don't ruin the illusion. Joe is in the podcasting shed.
Oh, okay. Electronically, I'm in the shed, yes.
So last time you were back from Monaco with a great Monaconese tan.
Monegasque, I think is the Monegasque. Word you're looking for.
Every day's a school day. This time you're rocking a bit of a wild kind of moose hunting, stubbly, rough outdoorsman look.
Well, I just haven't shaved really since I got back from Canada. Because I couldn't be bothered. Sometimes between races, you know, if I'm not going off to open garden fetes and all that sort of stuff, I don't bother to shave.
Yes, definitely worth not going out in this weather. My advice to everyone is to remain indoors. But of course, you had to venture outdoors from Montreal. What was it like as an event?
Montreal's always a nice event. It's a bit of a disadvantage, actually, because we have a time difference of 6 hours. So we have to do everything 6 hours more quickly than in other races. So it means that the amount of time one has to go off and party is somewhat limited because your deadlines are sharper. So it has upsides and downsides. We also have a weird situation where on the Monday, because we can't ever get out fast enough on the Sunday night, we all have to sit around Montreal the whole day on Monday, going shopping, eating lunch, and generally being thrown out of our hotels. So we have a sort of strange day afterwards, and then we all get planes in the evening. And most of the Formula One circus is able to get on the planes on Sunday nights, but we just can't get out fast enough.
So does that feel like a genuine holiday in Montreal then?
Not really, because most of us have worked quite hard on Sunday. So, I generally go to bed at some unearthly hour on Monday morning, which, you know, probably is about sort of 3 or 4 o'clock, and then get up again in time to get thrown out of the hotel. So, we try and negotiate rates with people, but the trouble is that during the Grand Prix weekend, their hotel rates are completely insane. And they try to rip everybody off. So we don't tend to play that game.
I suppose it's an advantage for people in your position then to get little sneak peeks of the F1 calendar that we'll talk about later in order to get your hotel bookings in as quickly as possible before us unwashed masses get there.
I wish that was the case. I mean, we've had a new calendar this week and I tried to get something yesterday and I was trying to get one at the price it was being advertised at. And of course, the people aren't entirely stupid. So they said, no, you can't have it at that price. But you can have it at four times the price, at which point I used some old Anglo-Saxon expressions and that didn't happen. So it's the way it is. But, there's not a huge amount of point in fighting it because you only get it for 1 year because they get switched on to people who come in very quickly after a calendar is published. And, fundamentally after the first year, they know when the date's going to be anyway. So
I want to ask Joe, because in Monaco, you said it was a little bit restricted and they weren't able to sort of give the fun and games that they had in Barcelona. But we all saw the pictures from the boat race. It looked like a genuine good time.
I think it was. I actually had gone by that point. I didn't see the boat race because I had work to do. And the press office in Montreal is a large tent. And what was happening in the course of the weekend was a lot of wind of the climatic variety, I should add. And the tent was flapping a lot and making lots of strange noises. In the future, hopefully, they're going to build us a proper press office. But I find it much easier to go back to the city and work in the hotel on Saturday night. So I did miss the boat race, but I did see some pictures of it. And I thought it was terrific. I was trying to imagine Bernie Ecclestone being on a self-built raft with his crew. Because there was Ross Brawn there and also we had Sean Bratches, who is the commercial head of the Formula One group, both of them being captains on their boats. And it looked like terrific fun, actually. I think there should have been a media boat as well, but I'm not going to volunteer for it because, frankly, I can't be bothered to go rowing halfway down. But there's some young, thrusting dudes who could probably do it.
Well, you can always tell on the corporate days which directors have been kind of forced at PowerPoint point, if that makes sense, to do it, and the ones who are genuinely throwing themselves into it.
Well, they seem to be, certainly Ross seemed to be enjoying himself, and Bratches, it was really funny because he looked like a bank manager with his trousers rolled up, but he seemed to be into it as well. So he seems to be, pretty enthusiastic about anything new, but we're looking forward to races where they get a bit more space and can do some more of their own things. I think we'll see some of that in Austria. I think we'll see some of that in Britain. But we'll just have to see what develops, really. I don't think we'll see very much of it in Baku anyway.
You mentioned in your blog that it was nice to see the McLaren boys having fun. Do you feel like that was, genuine? Are these boys holding up? Because we've been talking all throughout the season how it's such a shame. It's obviously a talented team, but they haven't really got a chance at the moment. How do you feel they're holding up spiritually?
Spiritually? Well, I think they're fine. I mean, these are hardened individuals. So. Yeah. Yes, it's not easy to do it, to keep motivated, but, racing people are racing people and they battle against the odds. It's a bit like if you watched Le Mans last weekend, if you were in Porsche number two and you'd lost an hour and a half in the pits early on in the race, you weren't really considering winning it, but you just put your head down, keep going. And at the end of it, you came out as the winner. And, that's sometimes that can happen. It's not going to happen with McLaren and Honda,
yeah,
I should
gonna add, say, but, yeah. Wildly optimistic.
These things, you never give up is the motto.
Yeah, that's right. You take the Lance Stroll approach and go gently, gently. As long as you don't go into any wheel-to-wheel combat and enough people retire, you can get that point.
I think that's a little harsh. I mean, he did fight quite well, and he has been on occasion looking as though he might be able to do something. Yeah, I mean, there were advantages in as much as people retired. But he did a decent job. So, I mean, I think I've said before that everybody involved in Formula One as a driver nowadays is, as far as I'm concerned, is qualified to be there. I don't see anybody who really shouldn't be there. You can argue the case for Ericsson, for example, or for Stroll, but they do have results in other championships. And, you have to base on that result. And again, if you look at some of the results achieved by people who are supposed to be great heroes in other championships, you'll find that some of them have less good results than some of the people who are considered not so good.
Well, my little audience here told me to stand my ground when it comes to Ericsson with you, Joe, and not to let you bully me.
I bully you? I'm not bullying you. I'm merely just saying that Ericsson's all right.
Ouch. Okay, controversial if true. Actually, we'll skip ahead a little bit. I did want to ask you about Stroll. I know it's featured in your GP Plus magazine, which is your online-only subscription magazine. I don't want you to, you know, give away all the goods now, but you had a chance to sit down and chat with Lance Stroll. Not the first time, I'm sure. But I just get an impression that although maybe the results haven't always gone his way this season, he seems to be, you know, not an arrogant diva, not a prima donna, doesn't seem to be upsetting anyone. And it feels like the Williams team actually like him and they're behind him.
I think that's largely true. I think that, I mean, you know, we can't get away from the fact that he's there because there's a large sum of money that comes with him. You know, and we'd be deluded to try and pretend otherwise. But he has a level of talent that is worthy of being there. So therefore, I think, you know, we can't really knock him for that. Is he the best possible driver they could have got in that car? No, he's not. But that's what they did. It was, you know, as far as Williams were concerned, that was a decent compromise solution to getting the best they could with the most money possible.
So with the time schedules then, did you manage to break your record for releasing GP magazine?
No. It was we were relatively leisurely. I think we had it done by about 6 hours, which is kind of the norm. But you don't want to rush too much because otherwise you may miss things. And we have had occasions in the past when we've produced magazines and they've, it was a long time ago now, but they changed the result after the race. Then you have to change the result in the magazine. So that rather ruins the effect. But there is a policy now not to change the result after the race. They do add penalties in, but they don't generally exclude anybody unless there's a technical problem. But we don't seem to have many of them, so.
But surely that's pretty good. It's an online magazine, so surely you can just change it.
Well, it's not online. No, it's a downloadable PDF.
Excellent. And where would I get such a said downloadable PDF?
GrandPrixPlus.com is always a good place to start. And if you go there, you can find out the details. But you basically download, you get sent some codes and you enter your codes and you enter a subscriber area and you download the magazine you want. And you get all the magazines in a year. It's a bargain of the century. You get this year, I think you have 22 magazines. That's one season preview, one season review, one for each race. And in fact, you also get the season review of last year as well, because we were just feeling generous. But that all costs you very little. And if you ask me how much, I'm going to forget. So there you are. It's very cheap anyway. It's not expensive. And we think it's a very fine product. But then again, we are totally biased. So
hey, that's fine. We don't mind bias on this show at all. We make no claims whatsoever to be neutral in any way. If you wouldn't mind, I have a question from Nick Luminosity 871 from our Slack group. And he wants to know, Joe, he says he's mentioned it before, but have you ever been ill on one of your trips since you never miss a GP? It seems like then you must have a bulletproof constitution to get you through so many races.
Well, there are two things there. I do have a bulletproof constitution because over the, whatever it is, 37 years that I've been traveling, or I think I can't remember exactly how many, it's a lot anyway. The body is exposed to all kinds of germs and viruses, whatever. And so you get very good antibodies. And we do tend to be quite tough, the Formula One fraternity, because you have to be. In terms of have I ever been ill? Yes, I've been ill a few times, but not obviously. We tend to save up our illnesses for the winter. I know that may sound silly, but psychologically you can do that.
I'm not going to let
your body sort of falls apart a week after the season ends, and you spend the whole winter sort of snuffling into a hanky, which is pretty horrid.
Yes.
But I did once have pneumonia, and the doctor said that I shouldn't get on an aeroplane to go to Spain, so I went by train instead. That was all right. Beyond that, it's just sort of small stuff. You can survive.
He says as well, he just adds that he enjoyed your anecdote very much of talking to Eddie Irvine. And do you have any more fun stories of talking to old drivers? Perhaps Jackie Stewart. He seems to be around a lot.
Yeah, well, I see Jackie quite a lot. He usually introduces me to to his guests as the worst Formula One journalist ever. Or sometimes he introduces me as the best Formula One journalist ever, depending on his mood.
Nice.
Everyone's sort of suitably impressed, and we have a bit of banter, you know. I say, "Who are you again?" and things like that, you know. So, Yeah, there's lots of old drivers kicking around. Most of them are actually working in television nowadays. They've come and stolen all the jobs from the media. You know, they just sort of wander around all weekend sort of feeling a bit lost.
Oh, poor dears. Hey.
I don't feel sorry for them at all, I have to say.
I'm lost on a thing and I want to ask you a question about it. So I'm going to do that now. So as you may know, we have a regular feature called Tech Time on our podcast feed here with Matthew Summerfield of motorsport.com. And a lot of the time, we're tempted to ask him very complicated questions because we want to seem clever and well-informed. And I have to say, I feel that same urge with you, Joe, to not ask the stupid questions. But really, if I think it's a question worth knowing, perhaps half the audience as well thinks it's a question worth knowing. And now we hear about Ross Brawn all the time. Even before he came in with Liberty Media, any problem in Formula One, they would say, we'll just bring Ross Brawn in. Ferrari's struggling. Bring Ross Brawn in. Maybe Ross Brawn's going to come back and save Williams. Well, now he's here. But what's he actually doing? So firstly, kind of, what's his role? Who is this team that he's putting together? And are they actually empowered to do anything? Are they suitably empowered or are they just an advisory body? I think is what I'm asking.
Okay. Ross is in charge of all racing activities. So basically, he's not in charge of commercial activities. He's not in charge of strategic thinking in terms of, you know, which continent should Formula One go to. He's in charge of making sure the racing is good. And he'll probably have a lot to do with the calendar as well, I think, in the future. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a bit of a commercial issue as well. But organizing the logistics for Formula One, if they want to increase, is harder and harder. So you're going to need some good people to work out how to do that. I mean, one of the biggest problems is that all these teams have these vast, ridiculous motorhomes, which aren't really necessary. And it just takes a huge number of trucks to move things around. Now, there may be better ways of doing that. So Ross's people will look at that. Ross's people will also look at how to make cars easier for overtaking. One of the things they've done recently is they bought the wind tunnel model from the old Manor team, which was up for sale because they were selling off all the assets. They bought that and they bought some model making equipment, and they can now go and take a model into wind tunnels and they can test theories and see if it works or not. So they can find out if, for example, you know, you can make overtaking easier by doing X and Y. And one of the biggest problems that the sport has had is that you've got all the teams working frantically at speeding up the cars and the FIA working frantically trying to speed them down. And the FIA's never had any resources to do it because it's all spent on road safety or whatever. And so basically what Ross is doing is using some of the commercial money to solve some of the problems that the FIA would be solving if it had the money to do so.
So Zach in the chat room, Zach in the shed, sorry, we christened it on Sunday. Is the Manor model sale confirmed or just a rumour?
No, it's confirmed.
Ah, well, there you go.
It was confirmed. They've got the model. They've got some, I think they've also got a bit of data. And I think they've certainly got the model making equipment. So yeah, that's all confirmed.
Great. And he's got a good team around him, has he? It's not just
Well, he's getting a better and better team. He's got a couple of... I mean, the problem he has is he can't go out and just nick people off teams. That wouldn't be considered cricket in Formula One world. So he's got to wait for them to be free. Now, there are some teams which have been changing their technical staff. So a lot of the Williams guys, for example, their chief aerodynamicist, their vehicle dynamics guy, they've both joined Ross. They've worked with him before. Their sporting director has joined Ross as well. I believe that one or two of the Manor boys will be there too,
shortly,
including, I think, Nick Tombasis, who used to be chief designer at Ferrari. I think he's a Ross Brawn protege at some point in his career, and I think he'll probably be joining Ross's team in London as well.
Well, that's interesting to hear. So this is a team that is genuinely empowered to make racing decisions about Formula One. And do you rate their chances of success? Because it feels like we're always talking about how to improve overtaking and it never quite happens.
Well, I think if you've got Formula One engineers trying to solve Formula One problems, you've got a better start than having just a bunch of bureaucrats trying to guess what to do. I mean, that's not entirely fair because the FIA's had one or two very good engineers working there over time. And it's not just pure guesswork. I mean, they have some good high-level engineers there. The engineers just don't have the budget to do things.
So do you think he can change things in the future on the scale of, like, making it easier for teams to come in? Now, you may yell at me, but I was always a big fan of, you know, customer teams and making it very, very easy for teams to come in and at least, you know, be competitive. Is this something that Ross is going to change? Like, could Cosworth suddenly be able to jump in with the changes he's going to make?
Well, there's about three questions in that one.
Answer all of them, Joe.
The first one is that customer teams are not a good idea. People think it's a good idea. It's true. You can have a cheap and easy grid packed full of cars. But what you're really doing is undermining the infrastructure of the whole of the sport. Because, you know, if you're a Mercedes customer car running team, you will be pushing other teams down the order, forcing them to go become customer teams rather than build their own chassis. And therefore, you're undermining the fundamental structure of Formula One, which is to have 10 cars being built by different teams. If you have that and it remains pretty solid, it's much better than just having the cheap, easy way out. So, and it's not fair either. If you've invested a huge amount of money in being a car manufacturer in Formula One, a bunch of people come along and use customer cars at half the price, and that's not right. Your investment is being destroyed by people who haven't made the same investment as you.
Well, Joshua Clare is saying in the shed that there should be 26 cars on the grid, no more, no less. What's your viewpoint? Do you prefer a more packed grid, like customer cars aside? If we could get more genuine teams in, would you condone that?
I think the rules allow for 26 cars, 13 teams. But there are other questions to be taken into account in this. First of all, you've got to move everybody around the world. You've got to find the money to do it. You've got to find 13 people willing to run Formula One teams. But you've also, it puts a pressure on the promoters, for example, because some places don't have enough garages for 13 teams. So they're already being screwed by everybody left, right, and center. And the public are complaining about the ticket prices. And if they have to build another six garages, it's a problem for them. So there's, you know, is there a difference between 26 cars and 20 cars? To be quite honest, the guys at the back, do they make any difference? Do you ever see any of these people?
No.
On the telecast? How often do you see Sauber apart from when they're being lapped at the moment? You know, is it really any different? And the answer is not really, no. If it goes beyond, you know, down below 20, I agree. It's not enough. But I don't think 20 is a problem. And I think that the other thing is that, you know, the rules allow for only the top 10 teams to get money. And that's just ridiculously unfair. Because if you're the 11th team, you are completely screwed. You have no money and you're competing against guys with lots of money. So, you know, you've got to look at the whole thing as a, I hate the word completely, I hate it, holistic. Ugh. But you do have to look at the whole thing and just say, well, what's best for the sport?
Well, if you use that term for medicine, then you and I will fall out. But the shed is asking if there's a loophole to be had here. If I'm Arriva Bene, do I stand to benefit from having one of my top engineers working with the FIA for one or two seasons? And then someone else cheekily adds in, just like Ferrari did with Haas.
Well, there have been lots of examples over the years where one team has hired somebody, he stayed for 2 years and gone back. Now, why were they doing that? Were they going there to get specific information? Were they spies in the camp? You know, this is motor racing. This is Formula One. Every dirty trick in the book has been tried and will be tried. So that's just, you accept it and get on with it. You know, you can't mistrust everybody. You've got to take some people at face value.
Yep. Shred often, kids. Shred often. But what about the rumours about a supposed new team? Can we get excited?
You can't get excited about... Because, first of all, it's an incredibly lengthy process to get an entry. You have to guarantee $20 million to the FIA.
Wow.
You have to come up with a business plan that is workable and accepted by the FIA before they grant you anything. You can't hire anybody before you've got an entry, because what's the point? therefore, and you can't buy everything off other teams. So you've got to have a pile of money and a load of time to set up a team. And it doesn't make any sense right now because we're going into a period when things are going to change. So the commercial structures will probably change and the technical regulations will probably change. So why in the world would you start a new team now? Now, why are there rumors saying that this is happening? The yes. answer is that there's an engineer wandering around asking people in other teams if they might be available to do something in Britain. Now, Well, you can try guessing. I would say that possibly it might be have something to do with it's not going to be Ferrari. They've already tried setting up English offshoots twice and they've closed them down twice. So that's not going to be them. It's not going to be Toro Rosso because they've already got an English offshoot where they do most of their research and development. So if I was a guessing man, I would say that Sauber, which has new owners and more ambition, is probably looking at setting up some kind of British operation because they have great difficulty hiring people to go to work in Switzerland. It's difficult to do anyway, but I mean, you have to go to a country where they speak Swiss German. Your kids have to go to different schools. The whole thing's a mess. So fundamentally, it wouldn't surprise me if there was some sort of idea that this might be something they'd be looking at. Now, is it? I don't know. Are they going to tell me? Of course, they're not going to tell me. But, you know, there has to be some explanation for it because the rest of it makes no sense at all.
Okay, if you definitely know, you can wink at the camera. We won't tell the audio listeners. There we go. Happy days. Look, there's some big dirty news this week. You broke it. I wouldn't say you broke it, but you definitely had it on your blog. So let's explore that. Big dirty news. Everyone, including me, is very excited to book their holidays for next year's Formula One calendar, and it is a bit different this year. There's a triple header, for example, in the European leg. There's 17 races in July, and I think the biggest change...
Hang on, 17 races in July? There's only 4 weekends in July.
Well, I lost count. I was counting them, and I thought, oh my God, how many have they got here? They've got a lot of races in July. What I've learned this week is it's desirable for a Grand Prix to have a race in July.
Yes and no. I mean, it's a section of the championship that is given over to Europe. And traditionally, that's been a time when the British Grand Prix happened, the French Grand Prix happened, the German Grand Prix happened. Now, the problem they have this year is that the French and German Grand Prix have both come back at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't fit 5 races into 4 weekends. No matter how hard you try. And there are other restrictions as well. One of them is that the World Cup final is happening on July the 15th,
right.
2018. And that will be broadcast at 6 p.m. Moscow time, which is 3 p.m. English time and 4 p.m. European time, which is disastrous for a Grand Prix. You don't want it to happen. Therefore, they just said, right, July 15, we're not going to have a race. So you then have a situation where you can have double headers on either side. So the 1st and the 8th of July, and then the 22nd and the 29th. You're not allowed to have races in August because there is a contracted summer break, which is necessary, I think.
Yes.
For Formula One people to recharge their batteries. I think that Liberty Media might be trying to change that in the future. But, you know, if you're going to drive away everybody who works in Formula One, you take away their holiday because, you know, we don't get to see families much and the summer holidays is a good time to do it. So, you don't want to mess with that. The problem they also have is that certain races have certain dates set in stone. For example, Monaco has a date set. They can't move it. It is contracted. Canada has a date that is contracted. The FIA wants Le Mans to be on a weekend by itself, so they can't put a Grand Prix on that weekend. So you have a lot of reasons why things can't move. The Australian Grand Prix has a contract to be the first race of the year and also to be on one of 2 weekends at the end of March. That means you can't use the beginning of March, which you should. If you want to expand the calendar, move to the beginning of March. It's logical.
That's
but you can't because of contracts that are in place left over from Bernie Ecclestone.
I was going to say, that's quite a big thing to have over Bernie Eccleston. Does he have like some incriminating photographs?
Well,
or
they
something?
Pay large sums of money to get these rights. Abu Dhabi has the last race of the year. They paid a lot of money to get it. Vladimir Putin doesn't want to have the race on his birthday because he's paid so much money. They wanted to move it to September, and they have moved it back, but his birthday's on October the 8th, and they couldn't do it then. So they've put it into, I can't remember where they've actually put it, but basically it's avoiding that weekend of his birthday. The Chinese didn't want to have a race on Easter Day for some reason, or some Chinese festival. So it's a real problem. Writing calendars is a big problem, because there's only so many things you can do in a year.
Well, there's been a big step change. I think for me, avoiding the other major sporting events has been kind of one of the more open-eyed things they've done. And I think it's going to be a very popular move. JBJ1138 in the shed. Wow, that's a good username. How did you bag that one? Thought that'd be gone by now. Said, why do they avoid a football game but book an F1 race the same day as the 24-hour of Le Mans? But obviously, they are avoiding that. Is that a deliberate move to allow drivers to compete in that event?
I don't know if it's to allow drivers to compete, but it's certainly sensible to avoid it. I mean, they've avoided it this year and last year. I think in 2015, there was a clash. Or am I getting that wrong? Anyway, Hülkenberg was able to win the race. I think that was in 15, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we've avoided it for a few years. That's because the FIA want it, because the Automobile Club de l'Ouest is an important club and they wanted it to be, you know, their super-duper race. But you can't avoid everything. And on the other hand, you have a situation which can be quite useful, like Monaco, when it's the same day as the Indianapolis 500 and NASCAR's second biggest race, which is the Coca-Cola 600. They're all on the same day. But the time zones are different. So you can just sit there in America, you can just sit there all day watching motor.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Racing and drinking beer and eating chips or whatever they do over there, you know. So, you know, you can actually add to your audience by having things on the same day. And it's, you know, it's very difficult to avoid everything. But if you look at IndyCar, for example, their championship stopped in September, because if you have a race at the beginning of the NFL football season, your viewership goes down something like 30%.
Yeah.
And instantly.
And Liberty is a media company, and they seem to be a lot more savvy to these kind of things.
Yeah, I think they just realize that you want to fit as many in as you can, but you have to work around as much as possible. Now, I think in the future, when some of these contracts run out, we will see changes. But you know, why in the world are we not starting at the beginning of March, not the end of March, for example? No, you can fit more in. Why are we having 5 standalone flyaways? In other words, we fly to Australia and then come back home again because there's nowhere else to go to. It doesn't make any sense.
Canada
as well.
You
should really, on the way home, stop in Singapore or stop in somewhere and do 2 races for the price of 1, if you like. Next year, I think we got Bahrain and China back to back. That's fine. That's good. But Canada's on its own. Brazil, I think, is on its own. I noticed there are 5 on their own.
Yeah,
anyway,
I think Brazil is.
And they just don't make sense. Have 2 together. They don't have to be right next door to each other. If they're 1,000 miles apart, that's enough, you know. But the triple header is going to be a complete zoo, because moving all these Pantechnicons around Europe on 2 consecutive weekends is going to be an absolute killer.
Well, you say, you know, perhaps they're inconveniencing the likes of you journalists who have to follow them around the world, but they've gone to the trouble of putting one on your doorstep, haven't they, Joe?
Well, not really, no. I live as far from Paul Ricard as I live from Barcelona, if the truth be told.
There's no pleasing you then.
My closest home race would be Spa.
Ah.
Or the Nürburgring. I can get to them more easy than I can get to Paul Ricard.
And would you be up for a Spa night race, as the Shed is suggesting?
Well, I think the Shed's gone bonkers, because in order to have a night race, you have to have lights. And Spa is a very long circuit, and lights cost an enormous amount of money. And if they charge an enormous amount of money, somebody's going to have to pay for it. And those people who are going to pay for it will be the fans. So do you want to pay a load more for your tickets to go to Spa? Answer, you don't.
You idiots, chat room. You've made a fool of me in front of Joe Sayward. I hate you guys now.
No, you haven't. But you just have to be a little bit... You just have to think things through a little bit. And a lot of people have what they think are great ideas, but they haven't thought them through. So there's nothing wrong with that. It shows a level of enthusiasm, which is delightful.
Would you mind a bit of journalistic advice for someone in our chat room? Actually going to be there, thrusting a mic in people's faces. Darren going to the Goodwood Festival. Hi, Joe. You're used to being around the paddock, and I'm off to Goodwood at the end of the month. Are drivers generally happy to be doorstepped for sound bites, etc.? And he's even cheekily suggesting trying to get someone to do the old, hi, I'm someone famous, and you're listening to Missed Apex Podcast.
I don't know. I mean, to be quite honest, I don't know how they operate at Goodwood, because I've never been, because it's always it's always between races and it's a weekend off. So I don't know how they operate. I'm told it's much more liberally minded than elsewhere. But, you know, in Formula One, it's very regimented. But everything in the media is regimented nowadays, you know. Wars are regimented. You got to go and sign on, get your pass. You're not allowed to go off and just sort of do the war by yourself. You have to go in embedded with troops and all this sort of rubbish. And they have press conferences at sort of 3 PM saying, well, yes, we blew up this today. So, you know, everything has become much more regimented throughout all sport, and throughout all activities, just the way it is. Whether that's right or wrong is another matter. But My advice to all young journalists is just go do it and see what happens. And if you doorstop somebody, you doorstop somebody. Why not?
There you go, Darren. Just go for it. Although we must point out that Lakes Boy, he isn't that young. Let's have a look at the chat room. They say, I think I just got roasted by Joe Sayward. My proudest moment. JB also saying, you do not need our help to look stupid, Spanners. Wow, thanks. Glad I have you guys about. I've got a question via email from Ray Vion. How many races does Joe think is the maximum? At what point does driver team fatigue become a demolishing asset? And also for you journalists, like, what would be too much for you?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think the drivers are the ones who suffer the most. In fact, I think they're the ones who suffer the least.
Get to go racing.
You get to go race and they have a good time. They get paid more money. You know, the people who really work hard are the teams, particularly the logistics people. What they do is insane. And, you know, the drivers sort of swan in and do the necessary. The journalists swan in and do the necessary too, you know. But it is hard going. And you're away from home a lot. And it is something that, you know, some of the drivers have fairly short careers too. I mean, you know, when you've been doing it for 30 years, there aren't any drivers who've done it for as long as I've done it. And, you know, not even close. Rubens Barrichello's a new boy as far as I'm concerned. And he only did 300 and something Grand Prix, you know. So that's the way it is. There is also sort of cumulative long-term damage. It's just the way you live, really, you know. But the answer is, if they come up with a calendar that works better, you can go away for 8 days and do 2 races. And if you can do that, there's nothing wrong with having 25 races. That's more earning opportunity if you earn by the race. And, you know, it's just sensible use of the time. What we do right now is just bonkers, because we go off for 8 days and do 1 race. And it doesn't make any sense. So, and that's flying around the world too. We're taking all the damage, time zone damage, just for 1 race, and it just doesn't make any sense at all. So I think they have to work on the calendar. They know they have to work on the calendar, and they know it's the only way of doing it. The other thing that Formula One needs to do is to downsize on its ridiculous motorhomes. I mean, they're all very impressive, but why can't you just build them at the racetracks and have them there permanently? So you just go in and you plug everything in, You can paint the walls if you want to. You can have your special kind of stoves that you want. You can have your special furniture if you want it. But just get them set up in advance. Go there once a year, and it makes sense. It doesn't make any sense what they do now.
That is a classic logistics mathematics problem there. Is it cheaper to drag them around the world or to build permanent facilities? I'm sure someone's done the maths.
I'm sure they have done the maths, but the thing is that it's a question of who pays for the permanent facilities, isn't it?
Because the teams
don't want to pay for those. They think that's the job of the promoter. So if they were smart, they'd all get together and build something permanently, and they could do whatever they like with it. You know, they can lay Ron Dennis's fancy tiles that glisten in the sunlight from certain angles only, this kind of stuff. But just do something sensible. And designing pit garages, you know, it's not just a box with a front and a back on it. You can actually do things quite cleverly nowadays. You can actually have galleries above at different levels so that you can have throughput of spectators. Paddock Club guests can go and look into things that are happening without getting in the way.
Do you get invited to the motorhomes, Joe? Because Paul Wright is asking, the McLaren motorhome is supposed to be a nightmare.
In respect of what? The McLaren motorhome is lovely.
Oh, well, there you go then.
It's lovely and it's wonderful. It has fantastic staff, one of my favorite staff. They have three stories. You are invited sometimes to the middle story where the management have their offices and do things. The top story, which is for VIPs and events, we sometimes are up there. Downstairs is generally just for sort of general to-ing and fro-ing. So some of them I don't go to very often. It depends on the situation with the team.
It sounds like there's some dirt to be
had there.
Sometimes
I say things that teams don't like, you know.
Well, we're going to have to gain your trust, Joe, to see if we can find out which are your favourites over the course of this season. The chat room there is actually obsessed with night races. They don't see why Monaco couldn't have a night race. Some of them are idiotically suggesting we add headlamps and why not. It feels like you're trolling me now, guys. Spanner's ready. Greatest F1 podcast produced from a shed in the world. Yeah, that could possibly be true. But if you don't mind, Joe, I want to bug you about the driver market. I know your readers love those bumpers, Joe. That's why I keep them rolling. Okay, so the driver market is starting to kick off. It feels like it's been silly season all season. If you don't mind, people are really curious about what is going to happen to Fernando Alonso. He, of course, made the comment, if we don't start winning by September, then I'm going to move on. And then Zak Brown is talking about, if we don't get results by September, then we're going to, you know, divorce from Honda. But obviously we get the feeling that these decisions must kind of already be known, because surely you can't change your engine manufacturer in September. So Alonso must be already getting whispers about what's happening
to
that car.
You can change your engine manufacturer in September if you want to. You won't get world championship points in the Constructors' Championship, but you will get the commercial value. So you can do it if you want to. And they could do it. However, if they're going to do it, they need to start work on it now. Maybe they already have, but it's very clear that the relationship between McLaren and Honda is not a happy one. It's not going to get any less unhappy. I think they've gone through all the permutations of trying to live together, and I think they've realized they're not made for one another. So I think we are going to see at some point soon a bust up there. Obviously, they'll try and do it as nicely as possible. And the only possible option is to go to Mercedes engines. So we'll see. If they get Mercedes engines in September, there is a potential for them to suddenly leap forward on the grid. Now, will that happen? We don't know. Will that be enough to keep Fernando Alonso? Maybe. But are they going to pay Fernando Alonso the same amount of money when they don't have as much money in the kitty? Because the Honda money will stop. So Fernando might have to take a pay cut, which I'm sure he won't be happy to do, because nobody likes taking pay cuts. Not that he needs the money, I should add. But
there's pride to be had.
It's a possibility. Basically, if he doesn't stay at McLaren, he's got nowhere to go. And it's as simple as that. Nobody else. They might rate him as a driver, but they don't want him because he's a disruptive influence. He's been at Ferrari and messed it up. He's Mercedes. They don't want to know about him.
Because of Lewis.
Red Bull have got their own people. So he's got nowhere to go. Renault maybe, but they can't really afford him either. So He can go off to America and try and win the Indy 500. He could join a world sports car team, but I think he'd probably fall asleep in the middle of a stint. And we'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, I might have slightly misconstrued what I was trying to say, which is the decision to what to do next season is probably being already made. But you make a great point between the relationship between McLaren and Honda. I mean, they've moved in together to save the relationship. They've got a dog. And now it's really just what's going to happen, you know, with the kid. What's going to happen to little Fernando? You say he's got nowhere to go. Is Renault really not an option then?
Well, if you want the kind of money that Fernando's used to having, yes, it is not an option. Because, yeah, you know, it's a huge pile of money that he wants. Now, he may be worth that money, but is the team ready for him? And is he the right person? Because when you're team building, you don't necessarily want a divisive person in there, you know. And Fernando has a record of being rather divisive. I think they'd like to have him if they could, because he used to be there before and he's had some successes there and one or two controversies as well over the years. It's the same basic team, Enstone team. It was the original Renault team and was the Lotus team for a while. So, you know, he could go back there, I suppose, if he was willing to take a pay cut. But is he, you know, he's now at the sort of twilight of his Formula One career. Does he really want to take a pay cut just to stay on and to be in a team that may not be in a position to win? Would not be better for him to go off and try and win the Indy Championship, which is, you know, he proved that he can be pretty competitive quite quickly. You know, he's seen Mark Webber go off to sports cars and win there. So, and they're quite matey, those two. So it could well be that he'll just say, oh, to hell with this. I can get well paid and win races doing something else. They won't pay him as much, obviously. But, you know, that's the way it is. I think the key issue in the driver market's got nothing to do with Fernando, actually. The key issue is whether Kimi Raikkonen stays.
Interesting, because now here's some shuffles. I've heard some terrible rumours that you can yell at me for. I've heard the rumour that if Vettel doesn't win with Ferrari, he's off to Mercedes, definitely.
Well, I doubt it. Why would they do that? What's going to happen to Lewis Hamilton?
So do you get that genuine feeling then from Mercedes? They are tainted by the Rosberg-Hamilton teammate dynamic.
No,
and they
I
just
don't,
kind of
but
want
I just
an easy
think,
life.
I think that what they have now is Lewis in a good place and Valtteri in a good place. You know, Valtteri's pretty quick. Why would you disrupt it? Why would you bring in elements to it that could be disruptive? And Vettel would be a disruptive influence there.
Hell, yeah,
He's also at Ferrari. He's winning the championship. Why would you leave?
No, absolutely right. So it's that number
However,
two slot.
If you're Kimi Raikkonen and driving around in fourth place, trolling along, why would you not be asked to leave? Well, because you're no threat. Now, wouldn't it be wiser, because Vettel's coming up to 30 now, wouldn't it be wiser Ferrari to go, let's get someone for the future, shall we? Who's the best driver out there of a younger generation? Ooh, Max Verstappen. Is he available? It looks like he could be because the Red Bull's been breaking down. And if he finishes lower than fifth in the championship, there might or might not be a clause, depending on who you believe, that he can leave Red Bull.
I believe there is a clause, Joe. That's what I choose to believe. But that's not really Ferrari's...
That's what I believe. And he can leave if he's below fifth place. Right now, he's sixth.
I talked over you then, Joe, but you were saying you believe there probably is a clause and he is currently in sixth place, which would invoke that clause. But that's not really Ferrari's MO, is it? They don't tend to bring in
Why
the
not?
Young dynamic...
They took Sebastian Vettel away from Red Bull.
Oh, I suppose so, but he was an established four-time world champion by then.
And Max Verstappen isn't a future champion. You can have a Hülkenberg, you can have a Perez, you can have a Grosjean. There's a whole bunch of people you could have, but if you're looking to the future, why would you not go for somebody young and clearly very talented? You could go for Dan Ricciardo if he happens to be sixth. You go for Max Verstappen. I would go for Max Verstappen simply because... he's just got the look of a real ace.
Can you
just
see
as if I were Mercedes-Benz, I wouldn't go shopping around buying in expensive Vettels. If you're going to get rid of one of the others, you just get hold of Esteban Ocon and promote him. Look what he's done to Sergio Perez's head.
Yeah. Can you imagine a situation where we get a race to the bottom between the Red Bull drivers not wanting to finish above a certain championship position?
I could see that happening, yes. Sebastian Vettel did terribly one season, didn't he, just before he left?
Oh, mind blown! Hang on, let me put my tinfoil hat on. Oh, this is brilliant. This is why I absolutely love having you on here, Joe. The chat room there is telling me, yeah, shut up, just let Joe talk. Fine. I'll listen to you. Look, there's a lot of other driver shuffles in the works as well. I think people seem pretty convinced that Jolyon Palmer's days are numbered, that it's if, not when. And I have to say, the comments from the team principal, they've all but called him a taxi very, very publicly. And that makes you wonder what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, they pay taxi drivers, so he's not a taxi, is he? Because he's paying them.
Yeah, he's a customer.
It's slightly different. But I think that it's fair to say that Jolyon has had a disappointing season, in part because he hasn't delivered the goods himself, and in part because the car has broken down a fair amount for him, and he's been unlucky. So can they get rid of him? Maybe they will. Who's going to be better than him? Good question. Is Sirotkin going to be better? He's probably got some money. They probably would like to try him out. It might be a good way of actually getting rid of him if he's not good enough. You know, you don't want guys on your books.
Yeah.
You give them a chance, let them screw themselves. I don't know. We'll have to see. But they're not going to put Robert Kubica in there.
Oh, so all you've the dreamers shattered out everyone's there, dreams.
All the dreamers out there need to just sort of back off and just forget that Snow White was a fairy tale. And Robert Kubica's comeback would be a fairy tale.
So why did they have him in that test then? Just because of the previous relationship?
Nice. Yeah. They were just being nice. And because he was a member of the team when he went on, and he wanted to do it. And yeah, he's done he did a very decent job for them. But are they really going to put him into race? No.
But he says he can drive without limitations. Why are you ruining this?
Yes. And so do half the other drivers in the world, don't they? You know, I could have been a contender. That's sort of Rocky's line, isn't it? You know, I could have been a contender if someone hadn't punched me in the head, and maybe not a contender.
Chat room, don't boo Joe. Joe is a guest here, okay? Joe is a guest. But look, I'm wondering...
Well, are they getting shirty, are they?
they just love Robert Kubica. And I think the story would have
so
been
do I,
a fantastic
but the fact
one.
Is you can't be romantic about these things. You just have to accept he had his chance, he had an accident, it was his fault, and getting back in is something that might be a fairy tale, but I just don't see it happening.
Okay, just going back to Palmer very briefly, the relationship may have been tainted early in the season. Do you get any hint that, you know, his comments after he put it in the wall in Australia, for example, and the team rebuilt the car, and then he sort of complained very publicly about the pace having disappeared from it, you know, after they'd spent all night building the car. Do you sort of get this feeling that maybe, you know, I mean, you can do little subtle things without deliberately doing it to favour one driver over another?
I don't think so. I think that you have to bear in mind that I'd have to look at the timings involved, but I'm pretty sure that he was put in there at a point when Frederik Vasseur was still there, and Frederik Vasseur's left now. You know, and Fred was a good judge of drivers. I don't know. In the perfect world, Fred would have had different drivers because he's always rated Hülkenberg. He's always rated Grosjean. He's always rated Bottas, and he's always rated Stoffel Vandoorne. But they weren't all available. So, you know, he got what he could get. And maybe the money that came in behind Jolyon was sufficient to swing the balance in his favor. I mean, he was a GP2 champion. You can't take that away from him. But not all the GP2 champions make it in Formula One.
Joe, thank you very much for joining us. I think we should point everybody to joesayward.wordpress.com, which is where you do your regular blogs. You did a great piece there on the provisional calendar, talking about how to fix Sauber. I do love your notebooks that you do after each Grand Prix. They're actually very long. You know, that's a proper coffee break style blog there. You got a lot
to
say.
It's just a normal size article. I know that people can't do more than 1,000 words these days, but you know,
us
get with it. That's what you have to do. It's a long read. Sorry, it's not a phone book.
No, but it's good. It gives you a real sense of what it was like to be there, and that's always the main thing I want to talk to you about. Also there, that is also where you can get details of GP Plus magazine. What have you got recently? Yeah, second guessing the car companies. I mean, the business side of Formula One and the politics of Formula One is really where people go, I need to find out what Joe's saying.
Well, actually, the best place to, I mean, a bit of a plug going on here, but I do a business newsletter, which costs a lot more money, which you can find on that website too. And I had most of the calendar right a couple of weeks ago when I published an article about that. But not a lot of people read that one. It's designed for the industry. But, you know, if you want to know what's really going on, that's the one to have.
Yeah, see, do we make that move to being, you know, informed industry people, or do we stick with our wild speculation? It's a hard choice for a podcast to make.
Not really. I mean, let's face it, when you go down to the pub, you want to be the expert. You want the best information, don't you? So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's why I bring you on. That's why I bring Matt Trumpets on. That's why I bring Summers on, Chris Stevens, so I can just regurgitate the things you say and sound smart in front of my boss, who happens to be a Formula One fan. It does me no disservice whatsoever. Joe, would you mind, as we're coming towards the end of our time, some wild speculation about the European Grand Prix? I know that you are a man of facts and logic, but we here like to guess pathetically.
Okay, I've got some bad news for you.
What?
It's not the European Grand Prix.
Wasn't it?
It's the Grand Prix of Azerbaijan this year. It was European Grand Prix last year.
Why did they change it? Now I look a fool again. Damn it.
Well, they changed it because everyone went, well, Azerbaijan's not in Europe.
Really so. We just got used to it, though.
Well, you got used to it. I mean, I thought the whole thing was ridiculous from start to finish, to be honest. There is a very small part of Azerbaijan which is deemed to be in Europe, and the racetrack's not in it. So, you know, what on earth they were trying to do. I know they had the Eurovision Song Contest, and they had this and that, and they're trying to be European because they want to be aligned so they can supply fuel to European countries. But, you know, let's get with the program here. It ain't Europe. So they've gone back to Azerbaijan on the basis they're going to try and sell that to people as a tourist destination. Well, good luck to them.
Well, yes. I mean, the surprise here is that they saw common sense in the end, I suppose. But do you have any wild speculation for the race? Because Lewis Hamilton had an absolute shocker last year. And I mean, on this show, I mean, I'm pretty neutral on Lewis Hamilton. Take him or leave him, you know, whatever. Hashtag 44. Are you a Lewis Hamilton fan yourself, Joe? I really should have vetted this before you came on.
I think he's an extremely talented racing driver. He's remarkable in that respect. He's okay. Not the most technical driver, but he's pretty good. I think that right now he has the same kind of level of performance as Vettel on a good weekend. And Vettel on a bad weekend, Lewis beats him. So the two of them are very well matched with the cars they're given. Who's the better driver? I can't answer that question.
Incorrect. But it's Lewis Hamilton.
I think that Lewis is I know it's the endless argument. Who's the best driver at any given time? Is it Alonso? Is it Hamilton? Is it Vettel? Is it somebody else? And you can't answer it unless you put them head to head. And even then, you can only answer it at that time. You know, comparing drivers is just a very tough thing to do. You know, we'll see. Lewis is in his prime and he's doing very well. His head's in the right place. He has occasional bad weekends, but he seems to be able to soak them up now. And we'll see. I don't know who's going to get ahead.
Heartbreak Ridge, Spanner's wrong as usual. Baha is saying it's really good to have writers like Joe who give different perspectives, those we are rarely privileged to. Mr. Clare says nobody can make the best of a bad situation like Lewis Hamilton, but he didn't make the best of a bad situation in Baku. I'm willing to give him a little bit of grace because it seemed like it was a bit situational with that electronic fault, but there's absolutely no doubt he had a shocker in qualifying, even though he dominated the practices. Do you back him? Do you back him to do well this weekend?
I think it would be remarkable if he didn't do well, because he's a great driver in a great car. Now, will he do as well as Vettel? Will he do as well as Bottas? We don't know. He'll probably do as well as Kimi. I think that's fair to say.
So, where would you point people? Where's the absolute number one place you want people to go to find you on the internet?
Well, Joe Blogs F1, obviously with 1G, is where to start. But that's the same as Joe Saywood. .wordpress.com. So that's where you can find out what I'm doing, and then you can see all the other things I do. That's the place to go, and I shall write something on there if I'm not traveling. I don't generally write during the race weekend because I'm busy earning money, and blogs don't earn money. So you have to sometimes be a little patient to get the good stuff, but the notebook will appear. The green notebook will appear after Baku.
Fair enough. Comment of the week is?
Comment of the week.
because Matt Trumpets normally gets to pick comment of the week, and he always picks one that makes me look bad or bigs him up in some way, I'm going to go for Luminosity871's comment. Spanners is a man with a plan. You'd better believe it.
Comment of the week.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us in the shed. We hope we can get you back on soon. Thanks for listening, you guys, the people who've come over as Joe's readers to listen to us. Make sure you subscribe to Missed Apex Podcast on iTunes or your podcasting app of choice. Don't rely on me to post social media things. Make sure that you subscribe so you get it every single week. Also, we'd love to have you come join us live. Find Missed Apex Podcast on YouTube and subscribe. That way, you'll get notifications when we go live. If you enjoy the podcast and you'd like to support the show, we have two ways in which you can do this. A, tell everyone that Missed Apex Podcast adds to your Formula One fandom. Or two, you can give us real money. If you support content creators on Patreon, then please consider supporting us. Go to MissedApexPodcast.com and click the Patreon tab on the menu. Joe, do you have a Patreon account as well?
No. No, I went through all that phase a long time ago and decided that it was better just to earn money in the normal way by having subscriptions. And if people want to buy quality, they can. If they don't want to buy quality, I give them a little bit on the blog, and it's up to them. You know, people have to learn. Eventually, you have to pay for quality stuff. It's just way of the world, unfortunately. If you look at all the news sites in the world, they're all moving in that direction. We can't go on giving it away because we'll all go out of business. So we have to charge for it. And you're lucky at the moment that so much is given away. But if you want the good stuff, got to pay for it.
Well, that is a sick burn, Joe. It's going to take a while to recover from that. We're still cheap old tat. So if you want to contribute to us, go to patreon.com and find Missed Apex Podcast. Hey, follow me personally at SpannersReady on Twitter. Make sure you email me at SpannersReady@gmail.com. I love getting your emails. To date, I think I've answered all of them, even though, you know, some of them have been quite hasty. But I do love hearing from you on email. It feels a lot more personal when people do that instead of just yelling at you and atting you on Twitter and saying you're wrong about all the things, Spanners. Well, I know that. I just don't have the time to think it through. Stay tuned to our timeline for Wafflecast, our race reviews, tech time. Until we catch you again, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory last forever. This was Inside F1.
I was actually earlier on considering it becoming the first nude F1 podcast because it's so bloody hot here.
Unfortunately, Tony Thunderbeast Barnard has beaten you to that our stream. I've told him explicitly he's not allowed to do it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.